From the American labor force of 164 million people, today we have chosen another two. We will tell you their stories. And of course, we will dissect the week that was from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, today, the 21st day of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There were some things this week, right? Coronavirus is still happening. Companies are still dealing. The Fed, I guess, is still watching, as the Fed does. All of that and more in the next 5 minutes of live radio. Samaya Keynes writes for The Economist. Catherine Rempel is at The Washington Post. Hey, everybody.
Hello. Hey, Kai.
Samaya, let me start with you and the coronavirus, COVID-19, technically, I think it's called now. And I would like to discuss it as not the global health pandemic that we have been told it is, but as a trade story. Travel with me now back to Monday when the biggest gizmo company in the world, or most famous anyway, Apple said, oh, look, we're going to have a supply shock because of this thing. And people were a little distraught.
Yeah. So there are two ways in which American companies could be affected directly. You know, the first is just considering the disruption in China. The first is, you know, basically half of the Chinese economy is shut down. You know, there's a lot of disruption there. But also in terms of factories being closed to business, that means that the parts that they were making can't go into making stuff. So in the case of Apple, I think it was both of those. And then obviously, the closer your supply chains are to China, the worse you're going to be hit. If you're like Apple and you really need the scale that China can provide, then yes, you're going to be pretty vulnerable to what's going on there.
Catherine, I was texting with a finance guy today that I know, I guess, I suppose, as I do. And I asked him if he was worried macro-wise about the coronavirus. And he said, not yet really, but maybe soon and maybe in a big way. Long tail on this thing, do you think, as we play it out?
It's very hard to say. A lot of people are trying to analogize what's happening now with what happened with the SARS outbreak, which was now, I guess, more than a decade ago.
Yeah.
But remember, when SARS hit, China accounted for something like 4% of global GDP. Today, it's 16%. And it's really hard to know what the trajectory of this outbreak will be. You know, will it die down as we get into spring? It's so hard to say. There's just so much uncertainty at this point. But you can imagine that there are various channels, including the ones that Sumaya mentioned, through which that could affect both the Chinese economy, its neighbors, and the United States, not just with manufacturing, but also things like reduced tourism, for example, which is a major thing for the United States. Yeah. We get something like $30 billion each year from Chinese tourists. So there are a lot of different channels through which it could affect the United States and other countries, right, if, in fact, this thing doesn't die down.
Samaya, one more thing on the coronavirus, and then I'll move on. It comes on the heels of a trade war which has done some damage to the global trade environment.
Mm-hmm, it has. And I think there's a sense of, you know, really, we just got over this thing with China and this other thing has hit. There was a recent blog by Kristalina Georgieva, and she called it
the head of the IMF. You know,
The head of the IMF. She called it, you know, our most pressing uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there is a sense, you know, maybe there's a sense in which all that U.S.-China trade war stuff really alerted companies to their exposure to China. It kind of reminded them, look, we're getting all this stuff from China. Maybe you should think about diversifying. And so, you know, really this will be the thing that says, yes, you really, really do need to consider, you know, how exposed you are to one supply base.
Catherine Rempel, bring it home for me then. How come everybody, generally speaking, people feel so good here about the state of the economy? Confidence is up. Think joblessness is down. I mean, you know, it's not terrible.
Well, by and large, the economy is doing well. We are now in the longest expansion on record, as you point out. Unemployment is quite low. On most major metrics, things have been looking good. To be clear, they're about the same as they were under the previous presidency, if we want to get into the politics of it. But
oh,
but
Lord,
we've
no.
had But we've had more than a decade of growth, and a decade of improvement means you are better off at the end of the decade than you were at the beginning of the decade. So all of that suggests that, yeah, things generally look good. Again, we have these lingering sources of uncertainty out there relating to trade wars, relating to the extent of the coronavirus, but the fundamentals still look pretty solid.
So may I take it global for me then and talk to me about Europe and Asia writ large?
Yeah, I think thinking about the going back to the virus, I think, you know, the risk on everyone's minds, Asia is clearly much more vulnerable to that. I mean, you know, things aren't exactly going spectacularly well in the EU right now for sort of different reasons. But if you're looking for short-term disruption, it's really in Asia. And it's there you see the governments, you know, really trying to, pump in measures to try and ease the effects. So we've got, you know, spending plans, monetary policy is trying to do its bit. That's where you're really seeing a vigorous response, which I think is necessary.
Do either of you think, and we've got half a minute tops here to do this, do either of you think the Federal Reserve is watching this with an eye toward perhaps more rate cuts, Catherine?
Hmm. I mean, I'm sure the president is hoping as much, but yeah. I don't know. I think they've kept their cards close to their chest. It doesn't seem super likely that they're going to cut rates anytime soon, but they're also very unlikely to raise them.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how I would put it.
Yep. No, I agree with that. Yeah. You?
If you look at investors, they think that there will be another cut or two by the end of the year, just in terms of probabilities.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Fed seems to be in monitoring mode right now rather than cutting mode.
Samaya Keynes at The Economist, Catherine Rampell at The Washington Post on a Friday here on the radio. Thanks, you two.
Thanks,
thank you.
This was not a great day in the capital markets. We didn't get there, actually. Some worries about the U.S. economy, about which we'll talk in a minute. Lingering COVID-19 fears, and down go stocks. Bond yields, too, by the way, cratered. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so as we walk here, tell me who you are and where we are.
My name is Rocio Montano, and we are in the center of downtown L.A.
Going to
a construction site right here. They're going to be condos soon enough.
Maybe a 10-minute walk from Marketplace Central in downtown Los Angeles. There is a big construction project going on. It's a brand-new high-rise. 35 stories, retail and restaurants, and a whole bunch of condos. Rocio Montano first started working this job site about a year ago.
At that time, there was like pretty much nothing there. We start off on floor 11, and I've been working my way up to the roof.
Rocio is the fifth of 10 of our stories of the 164 million people who make this economy work. 10 people who, roughly, represent the characteristics of the labor force as a whole. A series we're calling The United States of Work.
There's always things that you don't like about your job.
You work hard for what you want.
You know, every job has their ups and downs.
Whatever good job means.
I like the hustle. I like working fast.
That's not a career. It's a lifestyle.
The slice of the labor force Rocio falls into, natural resources, construction, and maintenance occupations, as it's known in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, accounts for about 9% of the entire American labor force. It's what you might think of as a blue-collar category. Agricultural workers, coal miners, electricians, oil riggers, and locksmiths as well. Something that all of these workers have in common is working with their hands.
Currently, I am putting on corner bead, so that goes after drywall. That's like our finish. So the tapers are going to come right behind us and start taping.
All right. Almost 13% of the American labor force is under the age of 25. Rocio is 24, and on that particular morning, her workplace was the 17th floor, which meant opening up a little box on the side of the wall and calling for the lift.
Ground up.
Market open 7.
And now we just kind of hang.
Yeah,
right?
you just wait for it. You know, it may take a few minutes, may come quick. It just.
Look at that. How did you wind up doing this?
I lived in L.A. my whole life, So I've always seen construction as something as part of the city, and I've always wanted to be a part of it. But as a female, I always thought that I couldn't.
Right.
And so I went to go study architecture. While I was there, we had this class where it was all the technical stuff. It was drafting, and where we were taught about bolts and studs and all of that. So I found myself more amazed about that. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in the how it's built.
The U.S. labor force is divided pretty equally between men and women, but in jobs like Rocio's, women are less than 4% of workers, a statistic playing out for her in real life.
We haven't seen the whole workforce here, obviously. I'm going to guess there aren't a whole bunch of women.
Well, when I started off, I was there only one. Currently, to this day, we have five.
That's not a lot.
That is not a lot.
Out of hundreds and hundreds of guys.
No. But I don't feel like, as an outsider, because at the end of the day, we all share this in common. We all share the interest, and you get used to it.
Yeah. You start at 7 in the morning. What time are you done?
At 3:30.
That's not bad.
It is not bad.
You practically got the whole day left.
Yeah. Well, I live close by, so I do.
Oh,
but
that's good.
Some people that make the drive, they don't.
Do you have your own place?
No, I currently live with my mom.
Saving money?
Yeah, right now. Yeah.
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 It's not cheap.
No. Oh, no, it's not.
It's not.
After somebody finally designated our call a priority run, the elevator finally got back down to us.
There it is.
17?
Where's my priority run, though?
She's it.
Oh, yeah, this is
she's
it.
It. She's
this
a priority run. It's definitely not me.
All the way up, priority run. Stand by.
It took us up the outside of the building and onto the 17th floor.
So here we are, 17.
Yeah.
Where, of course, it was a lot quieter. As we stepped into an unfinished maze of rooms that's eventually going to be a luxury condo, Rocio showed me the corner bead. The reinforcements, basically, that she had been tacking onto the edges of fresh drywall just that morning.
I was in this room putting on the corner bead, and then, it's like a finished corner, so it's so if you were to hit here, the drywall wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't come apart.
Yeah. How did you learn how to do this?
Well, I'm an apprentice,
yeah.
So everything is learned basically on the job.
Wow.
Rocio started working for Swinerton. That's the construction company building this building. After getting an associate's degree in carpentry a couple of years ago from a trade school here in Los Angeles. Now she's working her way up through the construction trades, an apprentice on her way to becoming a journeyman.
How much do you make?
I make $26 an hour.
Is that pretty good for you?
Well,
does that work?
Compared to what I used to make, yes.
What'd you used to make?
Like 16.
Yeah.
So
26 is nice. You live with your mom, you said, right?
You're
saving some money?
I do.
What are you saving for?
To move out.
What would happen to you if you lost your job tomorrow? If this job went away, what would happen?
Then there'd be another one. The city's big. You know, there's buildings getting built everywhere.
You've got a marketable skill.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing this your whole life, you think?
Yeah. Well, I know I'm not going to be wearing my bags my whole life because I can't.
Wearing your bags, what does that mean?
Like my tool belt?
Bags with stuff, right?
Yeah. But I will be in construction. At the end of all of it, I wanted to be a project manager, but I wanted to start in the field first to get all my experience and my hands on. So at the end of the day, no one can tell me I don't know what I'm talking about.
So you've got a plan.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be satisfied doing something that's not this.
What is it that you like about this job?
Being a part of it. Growing up, like seeing these buildings get built, and I'm finally being a part of one is what got me most excited about coming to work. But overall in construction, I just like knowing that I can do it. Like, I thought I was going to be my own obstacle, but it was my mind thinking that you can't do it because you're too small, you're a girl, you can't do that. But seeing every day how I do things and how I move quick and how I enjoy it, then it just makes it so much better to come to work.
From her perspective on the 17th floor, she's got a view of the city she's helping to build and a future she's hoping to live one day.
What's the worst part of this job?
Waiting for the man lift.
I'll tell you, the elevator took a while.
But later on in the program,
get a good radio station going on down the road and got a cup of hot coffee, and it's pretty good to be a trucker.
Different kind of job, different kind of view. Coming up.
Most people look down the road 8 seconds, you know. I'm looking down the road as far as I can see.
More from the United States of Work straight ahead, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is off 227 points today, 0.7%, 28,992. The NASDAQ down 174, almost 1.8%, 95.76. The S&P 500 sagged 35 points, 1%, 33.37 there. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow off 1.3%. The NASDAQ slumped 1.5%. The S&P 500 down 1.2%. Wells Fargo says it's going to pay $3 billion to end investigations into its fake accounts scandal. Wells Fargo stock gained 0.7% before that news came. The news came after the bell. John Deere shares reaped 6.9% today after some strong earnings. Get it? John Deere reaped. I love that. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note, get this, down to 1.47%. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. So look, over the last 10 years, the amount of rent that people pay in this country has increased by almost 50%, and the ripple effects are enormous.
Inequality is largely a function of housing. Segregation is pretty much by definition housing. And then climate change, a third of our emissions are transportation. So unless we start thinking about how people aren't going to be driving so far to work anymore, we're not going to really make much of a dent on that problem.
Make Me Smart. It's the podcast where Molly Wood and I talk about tech, the economy, and culture. This week, the housing crisis and how to fix it. Subscribe to Make Me Smart wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. So we did some big picture stuff up at the top, Samaya, Catherine, and I. Here is another little tidbit, this of the maybe not so great variety. New numbers out this morning suggesting that the services part of this economy, everything from banking to legal to dog walking, is shrinking. Two things you need to know about that. One, services is way bigger than manufacturing in this country, despite what you might read and hear. And number two, China. Marketplace's Scott Tong has it.
For the first time in 4 years, service sector business is down. That's according to an index from IHS Market. One soft spot in the service economy is logistics and transportation jobs that support exports. And that's because of trade tensions between the U.S. and China, says customs broker Rosemary Coates at Blue Silk Consulting.
We've damaged our relationship between the two countries. It's never going to go back to the way it was 10 years ago. You're going to see all the players, the services surrounding it, transportation carriers, air freight, ocean freight, are going to suffer.
Also down, the hospitality industry, as outbound Chinese tourists, who tend to spend big in the U.S., are not flying. And these pieces of the service sector add up to the biggest slice of our economy, far bigger than manufacturing or farming. Danielle DiMartino Booth is market strategist at Quill Intelligence.
If we see deterioration in the services sector, you're talking about the vast majority of the U.S. economy, and you don't have a little red flag raised. You know, you start flashing a big red button.
Most jobs in the U.S. are service jobs, 6-to-1 compared to factory workers. Economist Christian Zimmerman at the Federal Bank of St. Louis explains how this happened. As machines replaced most farmers and factory workers over time, that freed people up to do service work and have spare time for vacations.
Now going on vacation requires a hotel industry, a transportation industry. This is now possible because we're not working 12 hours a day in a factory or on the field.
To be clear, today's shrinking service sector number is just 1 month's number. We'll need more time to divine whether it's a trend or a blip. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We've come now to episode number 6 of the series we're doing about the 164 million of us who are the American labor force. Remember, 10 people matching the basic characteristics of the whole in age and sex and skills, education, and the kinds of jobs that they do. Rocio Montano, the apprentice carpenter from earlier in the program, she's got a view of L.A. that changes as she moves floor to floor in that building she's working on. The view Steve Fields has changes all the time, too, as he is driving the highways all across this country.
I keep my eyes moving at all times. Most people look down the road, you know, 8 seconds, you know. I'm looking down the road as far as I can see.
I imagine you can see economic things happening before the rest of us, right? Because all the stuff that we use is on your trucks, and if we're using less, you're not as busy.
Yeah, yeah. Typically, you can kind of see an upswing in the freight, and when things are getting better or slowing down a little bit. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what are you seeing now, man? That's the question.
It seems to be holding steady. I worked night before last. I went to Sioux City and back, Sioux City, Iowa. Pulled freight up there and pulled freight back. So,
Steve's a driver for YRC Freight. That's one of the bigger trucking companies in North America, and it puts him in a different category than Rocio, into what the BLS calls production, transportation, and material moving occupations. That includes about 1 in 10 members of the American labor force. Think factory workers, flight attendants, and professional drivers. Steve is based out of Kansas City, Missouri. He's 55, and although he's been doing this for 35 years, and you can tell he really does love it, it's not what he thought he'd be doing when he first started working.
Well, I worked at a cabinet shop for several years, and they needed some help one day, and I went out and helped on the truck, and didn't take very long. I involved into a driver, and my grandpa was a driver. He drove for a store called TG&Y, actually. I don't know who all remembers that store, but went several miles with him, several trips when I was a kid, and enjoyed it. I kind of think now, looking back at it, maybe he had me along to help unload the truck. But anyway, so that kind of got my blood young, and then back to the cabinet shop. I really enjoyed the freedom of getting out of the shop and, you know, seeing the being outside. So
being outside, but in a truck all day.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get the comforts of being warm and or cool, but you still get to see the country, right? You know, from the deserts out west to the south, up in the northeast, it's beautiful in the fall. So, it's kind of funny. I get a good radio station going on down the road and got a cup of hot coffee and, traffic's light, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty good to be a trucker.
You had me till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, man. I was thinking 2, 3 in the afternoon. I don't know about this middle of the night stuff. How many miles do you figure you've driven? I'm sure you keep a logbook or something, right?
Well, I've been recorded at 3.3 million without an accident.
That's a lot of miles. When you're not driving a truck, what do you drive? What do you have a car? What's your car?
Well, I have a pickup. I like to go camping. Of course, I have a trailer, a camper trailer I pull, and I have a motorcycle. I'll take it, go to a destination. We'll get on the bike and just go ride around, see the country, and visit places and do different things, you know, eat lunches at places and just be kind of a tourist, you know.
So you got a pickup and you got a trailer and you got a motorcycle. I'm going to guess you have a house probably too. Has this job been all right for you financially? I mean, you're doing all right?
Yeah. Yeah, it has. It has. It surely has. We enjoy union benefits where I work and, you know, I have a pension, 401. I make a comfortable living, great benefits. I even have an old hot rod in the garage that I kind of like to play with. So I got to be careful, though, because I'll ruin my record there, right?
Yeah, that's
don't want to be going to the speeding ticket or anything, right? So, but, yeah, I made a great living. It's, you know, I'm not a rich guy, but I do okay. And when we want to go on a trip, we go. So if we want to buy something, of course, you know, I think it's like a lot of people. We plan and save, and but yes, I've made a great living and enjoyed a lot of good financial benefits for it. So
if you were talking to a kid coming out of high school or maybe out of junior college or something today, would you recommend this job?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great job. I mean, you think about it, everything we use and or on a daily basis or own even has been on a truck at one time or another. I mean, from the pencil in your hand to the shoes on your feet, the gas in your car this morning, you know, just everything we have. So that, as a young person, I would think, wow, that's a pretty good industry. They're going to be around a long time, and, you know, it's a great industry. I've enjoyed every bit of it.
That was Steve Fields out of Kansas City, Missouri, whence he is driving freight all over the country. Next week, the last four of the people we want you to meet, starting with the last doctor left in private practice in one rural part of Ohio.
I have to sleep at night, and there have been times I'm like, I can't keep going at this pace, but I'm like, where are my patients going to go? We don't have someone to take that.
Two quick things before Monday. If you want to see more about all 10 of the people we are talking to for this series, and if you want to dig into the data and check out our methodology, we've got it all at marketplace.org/work. This final note on the way out, in which I ponder aloud, and not for the first time either, as you all know, whether I am in the wrong line of work. From the annals of venture capitalism today, this item. Maybe you've seen the canned water company Liquid Death. Water in Tallboy aluminum cans. You can get a 12-pack for $18.99. Well, the company announced this week, and remember, it sells water, that it has raised $9 million in VC funding. Water, $9 million. Honestly, though, it's a marketing story, right? Make water cool with heavy metal imagery, and people will throw money at you. And we are out of here. The Dow Industrial's down 227 points today, 0.7%. The NASDAQ dropped 174 points. That's 1.8%. S&P 535 points to the worst, 1% there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Brisdahl. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. And oh, yeah, this is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.